And I am glad that you all are here tonight. It's always one of the more exciting Sundays. You know, you get all the New Year's stuff going. Are you guys big into the New Year's resolution thing? Anyone got any strong New Year's resolutions? You don't have to say what they are. Just raise your hand if you. None at all. Look at this community. All right. Now I'm good. I'm good. Thanks. yeah, me too. Me too. I'm fine. I don't need to change anything about my life. So I'm glad I'm with you guys who are just like me. Anyways, let's move on to something else. This year, typically we're going through lectionary texts and we're looking at the same sections of scriptures or stories from scriptures that churches all over the world are looking at each week. And I love being a part of that. We've been doing it for 5 or 6 years now. But I wanted to start this year with a couple different things. I was realizing as I had the bad/good thing about a Christmas break for me is I go to North Carolina and I basically stop talking to anyone that I work with. So my jobs kind of just cease to exist. It's not a big deal for this one. Like, I come back and I just jump right back in. My other job just keeps storing stuff up for me and then just attacks me when I get back. But it gives me this kind of space and time to think that my life right now doesn't allow very much of. Jobs and little kids around the house and that kind of thing. And that can be a good thing. It can be a dangerous thing for me, too, to let me just sit around and think too much. But as I was thinking about it and considering it, I really was kind of putting myself standing up here, you know, starting another year and looking out at the congregation and those that are coming week to week. And I realized, like, how many folks that we have that haven't been here all that long, relatively speaking. Now, we're going into our 13th year. We're precocious teenagers this year. And there are some of you that were there week one. There were some of you that have been here from the very beginning, and you've been through every manifestation of us trying to figure out what to do when kids started showing up and building spaces and all these different things we've gone through, and staff, and how do we staff, and who do we staff, and all these kind of things. Do we handle snakes? Do we not? All the big decisions that churches have to make as they're growing up. And so some of you have been through some of that, and some of you have just kind of gotten here recently. You just moved to town, just found us. And we've had a lot of people move away, a lot of people that have gone to other places now. And I realized, man, I think it's been a long time since we just took a step back and reminded ourselves, like, where we came from and why we're here. Because the truth is that if you spend much time with us, you'll realize, and I mean this term affectionately, we're a little strange. And not just as individuals, certainly we have a lot of that going on in this room, myself included, but just as a community, we are not typical. In fact, I can genuinely say I don't know of any other church that's exactly like this one. We've kind of done something different here. Doesn't necessarily mean everything we've done has been good or been the best, but it is different, right? And it has all come from someplace. It wasn't arbitrary. We made intentional decisions to be the kind of community that we are. And we are not for everybody. We are in no danger of becoming a mega church anytime soon. And most mega churches don't not have their own building, right? This is kind of one of those mega church things. You got to have your own building, but and we get that, and we're fine with that. But what I want to do is take a couple weeks and step back and remind us and talk through just some of the framework of why we do what we do, who we are, where it comes from, what kind of the philosophy is behind it, and how we've gotten to what we are, right? So if you go onto our website, which I know most of you do on a weekly basis and read it intently, you'll see that we've got these kind of core beliefs, these core kind of convictions, and there's four of them. And loosely, we'll be covering all four of those over the next couple weeks. But specifically tonight, I want to talk about the one that I think is the most important. I think I'm entitling the series "Why We're Weird." I think that's a good title, and maybe it'll bring some new people in or something. You know, all that marketing money that we have now to spend. What is it, 25,000? Yeah, there's going to be a street sign with my face on it. It's going to be great. We got some money to burn now. Just kidding. So why are we weird? And first and foremost, I want to talk about this one thing, and it's simultaneously a thing I like to talk about the most, the word I like most to have people hear when they're in the room and here on Sunday nights, or when I'm talking about who we are outside of this place to people. And it's also one of the scarier topics for me because I think it's so, we're so accustomed to it, we've heard it so many times that it's lost some of its punch, and so I want to unpack what we really mean when we talk about it. And tonight, I want to remind us that the reason why we started meeting in someone's house and deciding to do this thing at all It is always and only, first and foremost, been about the unconditional love of God. That is, if you boil everything else away, if you strip everything else, if you get to the very DNA, we hope, of why we're here and everything we've done and the decisions we've made, that's always going to be the most core, basic element. It's always and only about the unconditional love of God. This is our most core belief. And even on a week-to-week basis, you've probably noticed some repetitive things that happen in this room, and one of those is that you're going to hear that from me each week. Because I think it's that important. Now, I understand the problem with us saying, tonight we're going to talk about love. Right? Because you risk either sounding like one of the 9,000 Hallmark movies that just came across the TV in the last month or so, or like some bad caricature of, you know, a hippie who's, you know, filled with, you know, peace signs and maybe narcotics and, you know, hey, man, it's just about love, man. It's just love, man. You know, it's like one of those things where, yeah, but what do you mean? Love, dude. Love. Like, all right. Love. All right. Love. And you're like, I don't know what we're talking about here, right? We throw that word around a lot, and it's one of those things that can feel trite and passive and sentimental. It may make a very nice bumper sticker to put on your car so you can signal to others how virtuous you are. But it feels like a platitude or something really naive people say because they don't live in the real world yet. I mean, by all means, put some puppies and babies and grandmas in your car commercial, but at the end of the day, we still got to move some units. You know, so love is a good sales technique, but that's about all. There's not much bones underneath that, right? We don't live in a Disney movie, after all. This is the real world. So I want to briefly try to disassemble and just kind of destroy that kind of myth and that misuse of the word love. And I want to briefly unpack what we mean when we say that that is what we are here for. When we say that we are here by love, we are here in love, we are here for love. And I want to start doing that. I'm going to look at a few different verses tonight. It's not going to be a typical night. We look at like one parable and unpack it. I'm going to jump around a little bit. And I want to create a little bit of the framework so you can understand where we're coming from. Let's start by thinking in the most broad theological framework of love that we possibly can as an organizing principle. Why is this thing love? And earlier you heard 1 John chapter 4, you heard a few verses. I just want to look at 7 and 8 right now. It says this in 1 John 4, 7 and 8. Dear friends, let us love one another, for love comes from God. Everyone who loves has been born of God and knows God. Whoever does not love does not know God, because God is love. And we could do a sermon series on just those couple verses. There's so much there. But I want to concentrate on those last three words. God is love. Love, because I don't think I know we didn't when I was growing up, we did not make enough of that. The implications of those three words are huge. God is love. I mean, consider what the ripple effect of this idea. If God is love, I'm not saying God is loving, I'm not saying God sometimes loves or loves better than you. God equals love. Mathematically, that would also mean love equals God, right? But God is love. There is nothing that God is, nothing that God says, nothing that God believes, nothing that God fill in the verb of your choice that is not love by nature. Because God is love. Love is not an activity of God's among other activities. Love is not a facet of God's personality among many others. Love is not a part of God's life that maybe competes with some other part of God's life, which is kind of what I was brought up. God is loving, but he's also just, you know. No. You cannot, in fact, I don't believe, you can have a sound theology and utter popular phrases that I grew up with, like, yes, God is loving, but no ifs, no ands, no buts. God is love. And everything comes from that. And remember, if God is God, the creator of all things, the first mover, the thing that set all of this emotion, everything we can ever see, imagine, think, the cosmos put into place by God, conditions cannot be placed on God, right? God cannot be restricted if God is creator, if there is such a thing as this God that we try to point at and understand. Right? Because a God with conditions, a God with restrictions, is not much of a God. Therefore, when we say God is love, that also means something different. That means God is unconditional love. There is no condition, there is no restriction put upon that love. Because that love is God, and God is love. I can no more escape from love than I can escape from God. I can't escape from God, I can't get away from God. There is no restrictions to God, and God is love. Everything we believe, everything we talk about, everything we do, if you boil it down, ends up coming back to this basic truth. And while I was taught this verse, and I would tell you God is love when I was growing up, the truth is, a solid 70% of my theology did not come from this truth. A lot of what we taught, if you kept breaking it down into its basic elements, ended up as God is many things, but not love. You hear me say it each week. There's nothing you can do to make God love you any more or any less than God already does. God's love is without condition, without restriction. It just is. God loves you as you are right now, knowing everything about you that maybe no one else knows. God is love. God has only ever loved you with all of God's nature, because God is love. God is unconditional love. And you hear that from me on some level each week, because if you want just the Cliff Notes version of Mike's theology, I can give it to you in like a couple of sentences. And that's where it all comes from. It's all that, and then whatever comes from it. And it's true because it's, and I don't have time to get into my own story, but because it's true for me. I grew up in church. I grew up believing in God. I grew up having theology. I went to classes to become a member of my church, and I learned the creeds, and I learned all the different, you know, terms for everything, and I knew all that stuff. But it wasn't until I was 19 or 20, and at that point, suffering a lot of my life from a lot of things, and depression and self-hatred and all these kinds. It wasn't then until, I don't know if it was the first time I heard it or it was the first time I heard it, but when I found out that God actually loved me. I mean, I don't mean just like sing the song. I mean, God loved me. God wasn't disappointed in me. God didn't sit around shaking his head and wishing I'd do more, and if I could do more, then maybe I'd be better. And God didn't, well, I had these plans and you're not living up to them. God was not disappointed. God was not angry. God just loved. Even if I'm the son that comes home empty-handed, having ruined everything God ever wanted for me, I'm 0%, oh, for everything, God still runs down the road to meet me, throws his arms around me, and throws a party for me, right? Unconditional love. That is the nature of God. This is the thing that we can never get away from. This is the thing that we should never get away from. This is the thing that should be the most clear message that comes out of our mouths, out of our budget, out of our work, out of our living in this world. God is unconditional love. And that, if you really take it in, that changes everything. Nothing is left untouched by that. And it's this beautiful idea, and it's great as grand theories go. But again, we live in the real world like that. That's great. But when I leave here, I'm going to have to face the same work and the same family situations, the same illnesses. I'm going to face all that. What do we do with that in the real world? And this is where Jesus comes in, right? We need some kind of hook to hang all this on. We need something. To quote the great ancient saint Johnny of Cash, flesh and blood needs flesh and blood. I mean, at some point, you got to put some skin on it for me to get it. I'm not that good. Colossians 1, verses 15 through 20 says this: the Son is the image of the invisible God, the firstborn over all creation, for in him all things were created, things in heaven and on earth, visible and invisible, whether thrones or powers or rulers or authorities. All things have been created through him and for him. He is before all things, and in him all things held together. He is the head of the body, the church. He is the beginning and the firstborn from among the dead, so that in everything he might have the supremacy. For God was pleased to have all of his fullness dwell in him, and through him to reconcile himself to all things, whether things on earth or things in heaven, by making peace through his blood shed on the cross. In the life of Jesus, in the person of Jesus, the flesh and blood of God is love, we have a much clearer picture of what this grand concept means. This is what God is love means to us, people of flesh and bone in this broken world. God is love, and Jesus is the fullness of that love with skin on. In his life, in his teachings, in his death, in his resurrections, we can begin to grasp what love without condition looks like in this world. Unconditional love became incarnate by going directly to the place where all the conditions have been put on love, right? And when unconditional love comes into this place, suddenly what? The last become first. The widow, the orphan, the soldier, the leper, the hungry, the thirsty, the imprisoned, all those for whom love has been restricted, it's been lifted. They're uplifted, they're redeemed, they're healed, they're held up as example of God's nature of love. In fact, Jesus teaches that all of religion, all of belief, everything is caught up under the God who is love, right? There's only one legitimate response to it. Matthew 22, 36 through 40, among other places. What is the greatest commandment of the law? What does this all mean? Jesus replied, love the Lord your God with all your heart and your soul and all your mind. And the first is the first and greatest commandment, and the second is like it, love your neighbor as yourself. All the law and the prophets hang on these two commandments. It's always only about love. Nothing falls outside of it. No part of God falls outside of it. No part of our calling as followers of God falls outside. It is always only about love. And it is always only about responding to the God of love. And how do we throw our arms around the creator of the universe? We throw our arms around God. We love God by loving each other. By loving our neighbor. That's the only way we can really do it. Now again, love is this word we use so often. Love is this word that we bandy around for so many different things. It has lost its punch. But remember, as we come in here each week and as we look at the life and the teachings of Jesus, we have something to define this, right? We have the benefit of something besides a Hallmark movie to draw from when we define what love is. And love, as we are talking about it, it's not some sentimental thing. It's not some bumper sticker. It's not passive. It's not toothless or trite. It doesn't express itself in platitudes. It manifests itself on a cross. John 15, verse 12 and 13 says, my command is this, love each other as I have loved you. Greater love has no man than this, to lay down one's life for one's friends. This is what we mean by love. This is not trite. This is not simple. This is not pie in the sky. This is a love that chooses to bleed for its neighbor. This is the love that chooses to die instead of kill. This is the love that chooses to turn the other cheek, to walk the extra mile. This is a love that puts others before themselves. And that is anything but clean and easy. It's humble, but it's resolute, right? It's characterized by selflessness and sacrifice, but it refuses to compromise. It is costly and painful and sometimes looks like it's getting taken advantage of. But it is committed to something bigger and deeper than the goals of this world. It is the place where we find true beauty. It is this upside-down economy of God in God's kingdom where it's worth everything it costs. Love is not some vapid word that we use to just kind of dodge the harder questions of life. Love is a deep, simple, but difficult calling into this world. And that is what we are talking about when we say that we are here for love. Not some detached pie in the sky, not some motto or something we want to put on bumper stickers in our shirts. A living, breathing, bleeding family walking this world together. That's what we wanted. That's what so many of us felt like was lacking in our lives of faith. This community is intended to be a gathering of people motivated by and trying their best to manifest God's kind of love in this world. And as imperfect as we have certainly been at doing it, that will always be the dividing rod for us. That will always be the definition for us. every decision we make should pass through that lens. Is what we are getting ready to do as a community, will it reflect, promote, will it embody the unconditional love of God? If yes, go for it. If no, forget it. Don't need it. It's not what we're here for. It may be perfectly nice, but it's not what we're here for. Is it loving for us to do this with our limited time, our limited energy, our limited money? Does it reflect God's unconditional love? If yes, go for it. If no, don't worry about it. You don't have to burn any energy condemning it. Just let it go and move on. That is the fire that lit this whole thing for us. And, you know, 13 years in, it's easy. It's easy for me, and I'm the one getting up here teaching. I know it's easy for you. It's got to be easier for you than it is for me, and I do it frequently, to just show up. This is just kind of the thing we do on Sunday, right? And forget. There is a purpose behind this. We are here for a reason. We're here for the reason. And yes, this makes us a little bit weird. If you're wondering why we say and mean everyone is welcome, even the person you would least like to have sit next to you in the pew tonight, they are just as welcome as you are. If you're wondering why we say something like that, it's because love. If you're wondering why half of our budget goes outside of our walls instead of building up something bigger and better that might attract more people here, love. We believe it's more loving to do that. If you're wondering why everyone that works at Ecclesia, that's employed by Ecclesia, gets paid exactly the same rate and there's no hierarchy, love. We believe that's the most loving way to handle our finances for those that are working here. If you're wondering why we'll never spend money on our own giant building, because it's our conviction that that would not be the most loving thing to do. It's because we believe that every choice we make should approximate God's love in our time, in our place. And sometimes it means they're terrible business decisions. Sometimes it's illogical. Sometimes it doesn't make sense. Sometimes it's not what we want to do. Sometimes it's the least easy choice that we have. And it's almost, not always, but almost always, a terrible way to try and build a large organizational structure. But we hope it is the things that we can do to most closely manifest a God who is unconditional love. Love plus nothing else. And we would rather, and from the beginning we've said this, we'd rather fail trying this than succeed doing anything else. No one is more surprised that I'm standing up here 13 years later than I. This was a terrible business plan. We had no funders. We've been building the bridge we're walking on for 13 years. And I don't know much about bridge building, but I'm pretty sure you don't get awarded the contract if that's the plan you show up with when you're bidding, right? But we'd rather fail attempting this than succeed at something else. Because there is a truth. It's true about your life, it's true about my life, and it's true about our life as a community. Everything we do, everything we say, everything we spend preaches a little sermon about what we believe. It preaches something about who we are and what we believe. And we want all those sermons to strike the same note. We are here for love. And I want to take some time to remind us of that. I want to take some time to call us back to that. And I know, you know, it's New Year's, right? And this is where we make all the resolutions. And it's New Year, New Me. Here's my encouragement. New Year, Old Us. We don't need any new ideas. We just need to keep doing this one better. It doesn't mean if you have an idea about something we can do. I'm just, you know what I mean, right? Okay. Don't you tell me any ideas or you're out of here. So this year you, again, maybe for the first time, maybe for the 13th time, are invited to be a part. You're invited to simply follow together with us as we try to figure out what does it mean in this broken world and in our own broken lives. What does it mean to embody an unconditional love? To believe that we are unconditionally loved by God, that there is no one that God loves more than us. And to embody that unconditional love that says there is no one that is outside of God. God doesn't love me more than anyone else. To have that inherent value and humility all rolled into one beautiful package. You're invited to be a part of it again. And I'm not going to try and stand up here tonight and try and manipulate you, right? I'm not going to say, you know, we need 15 more volunteer hours. We need this much more money, and you need to be the person to stand up and do it. I don't know what you're called to do in this community. Maybe nothing. God may be calling you to coach 3 little league teams and mentor a bunch of boys who need it on a little league field. God bless, go and do it. Come back here on Sunday nights and tell us what's going on so we can be encouraged by it, right? But you are invited as we continue on this path. It is narrow, it is difficult, it is hard to navigate, and it looks weird to the outside world. But it's who we are. So yes, please show up on Sunday nights. It's better when you do. But more importantly, walk with us as we try to follow the implications of a God who is love. We invite you to think about giving yourselves fully to the idea that we are all made by love, in love, for love. That is what it is worth spending our time and energy and lives on. To consider being here, giving of yourself and inviting others to come along. I don't want us to be big for the sake of being big. I am convinced that there's more people that need to be here. Not because we're the best church in town, not because we need to have this many people or have this big a budget. I don't really want to deal with bigger budgets and staffs and all that kind of stuff, to be honest with you. But I'm convinced there's more people that need to understand God's love that don't right now. And we may be the just kind of weirdos they need. Consider being here. Consider giving of yourself. Consider inviting others along with us. I am more convinced now than I have ever been that this is what we are supposed to be doing, who we are supposed to be, where we are supposed to be. So instead of new year, new you, new year, old us. You are invited. God is love, and that changes everything. Let's pray.